Have you heard of Gold Belly? I know, it sounds weird, right? Gold Belly? Well, it's this amazing website that I order from now all the time, where you can get the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants all across the U.S. And it is perfect for game day, Valentine's Day, any other thing you have going on. Follow me on X and see my video of the Pat's cheesesteaks that I ordered. They were amazing. And my podmaster, Chris, he ordered a gluten-free cake from Daisy Cakes that he says was fantastic. It's for his son, who's on a gluten-free diet. That's the range we're talking about when it comes to foods you can order. Gold Belly has everything from iconic regional favorites to specialized options that you just can't find anywhere else. When you order from Gold Belly and then serve it at your get-together, people are going to say, oh my God, where did you get that? I can't wait to get some Lou Malnati's authentic Chicago deep dish shipped right to my door. And people will say, how did you go to Chicago? Whether you're looking to turn game day into an unforgettable experience with friends or want to impress a loved one on Valentine's Day, go to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code ZABE. That's goldbelly.com, code ZABE, for 20% off your first order. That's Goldbelly, your game day go-to. We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh no. With MyBookie and its cash out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets, or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag. Today's Power Lunch is brought to you by The Palm at Tyson's Corner, Virginia. Sure, The Palm is great for a fancy night out, but it's also the perfect midweek spot for a lunch with a client, or lunch to catch up with a friend, or maybe even to do an interesting podcast like this. Power Lunch menu selections at The Palm start at $26 for an appetizer, meal, and dessert. Book your reservation today directly at thepalm.com, open table, or by calling them at 703-917-0200.
I can make most anything on the menu except
whatever you got is fine.
I'm going to say some bad words. You're just going to have to deal with it.
PB&J with the crusts cut off. Well, Brian, this is a very nutritious lunch.
Hey, you got enough money to pay for all this? You know, money, cash, dollars, dinero.
So what I believe you were trying to say is thank you.
Thank you?
You're welcome.
What can I say except you're welcome?
You don't want me to come off as a dick, do you?
Well, I've kind of got used to that over the years.
You've kind of got used to that. Well, I would just like to not be that guy. I would like to. I always try to show you respect.
It's a new year. It's, you know, a little late to be new year. Month in, but,
yeah. I mean, when I'm coaching you up on, hey, I need you on the mic more, Andy, so you get really present, I feel like this guy was in radio when I was in diapers.
Well, not quite diapers.
Well, I wore diapers until I was 12 years old, Gene. You probably don't know
like
that.
Like Costanza, right?
Yes, exactly. It's full circle because I'm getting close to wearing diapers again.
Not even close, my friend. Not even close. We are at The Palm. It is a power lunch on a Monday. It's quiet here on a Monday, but I wanted to get Andy in on a Monday because I hadn't fed him in a while. And we had to get in our friend Gene Wong from the Washington Post, one of the last few survivors of that great newspaper in the sports section. And Gene has run into us here at The Palm like 7 or 8 times because you do come here a decent amount.
And I might have to tell you, I feel a little bit offended that it's taken so long.
Taking so long to get on?
Yeah, exactly. Well, but I'm happy to be here.
Okay, well, you finally made it on. Now tell me you were not stalking us. Like, hey, I think they're going to be here. I'm gonna show up and try to get on the podcast.
Okay, I don't think I'm that kind of fan. I'm a big fan, not that kind of fan.
If he was doing that and having to pay for 7 or 8 Palm meals to get here for free, that's a pretty big expense to get a free lunch.
You're saying it wouldn't not work out economically.
No.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Gene, it's great to see you. Obviously, the Washington Post has been in the news lately because of looming cuts, budget cuts are reported, including the possibility, and this shocked everyone who has grown up in the D.C. area, of possibly the entire sports department being flushed. And yet here you are in good humor with a gleam in your eye, with a survivor's attitude of, hey, this could all end tomorrow anyway, so I'm still here. And I really respect that about you.
Well, I was telling this to Andy earlier that I am glad it happened, whatever the future holds. And I'm trying not to be sad that it might be over, because I had a great run. If it's meant to come to an end, I'll have just some of the best memories you could ever have. It's my dream job. I grew up in D.C. My first thing I did every morning, go to my doorstep. I'm sure Andy did the same thing. Get the Washington Post, read Tom Boswell, read Tony Kornheiser, read Michael Wilbon, read Richard Justice on the Commanders / Redskins. When I started at the paper, David Aldridge was covering the Bullets Wizards. Christine Brennan was doing Olympics. I mean, right there, there's a murderer's row. That's the 27 Yankees of
and
sports writing.
That's just a slice of all the names.
Yeah, here's how far back I go.
Okay.
My grandfather was a cartoonist at the Post in the late 20s and early 30s.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, where he befriended another young Jewish guy from Maine named Shirley Povich.
Heard of him.
And he said, Shirley, you're really good at what you do. Why don't you apply to be sports editor? That's how far back my family goes with the Post.
Wow, your grandfather?
Yeah.
Cartoonist.
He was a cartoonist.
In the 20s.
In the 20s. He later went to work for Disney. That didn't last very long. Came back and had a career as an artist working in glass. He used to work in sandblasting glass. Yeah.
Hey. Look, I still have a letter from Shirley that I wrote to him that he wrote back when I asked him, are there jobs available? How do I start? And he said, I recommend you talk to Len Shapiro, who then was a sports editor. And he put in a good word for me.
Wow.
And Len called and said, let's do an interview.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's very nice. Yeah, so cartoonist in the 20s. Careful, Gene. Andy's grandfather might have cartooned some very racist war propaganda back in the day.
No, actually. You know the kind of
shit that was put in papers in the 20s during the war. It was like, holy shit.
No, what would happen is if there was somebody famous coming to town, this is how newspapers worked, I guess.
Yeah.
He would draw a caricature of that person, and that would be in the Post. Hey, so-and-so is coming to D.C. today.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, that's another little wrinkle to your life that I did not know otherwise. So I guess you can't break any news here on this podcast about the state of things. Everything is under wraps. I know people have been saying, it is a little social media campaign, # save the Post.
Yep.
Anything you want to report right now?
This week, I'm told there may be some news that may be worth reporting, but I'm just focusing on the people that I work with. That's actually, the saddest part of this, knowing that we may not be working together. You hear this about sports teams all the time. Like, it's the last dance, right? Jordan and Pippen and those guys playing for the last time. I mean, I think we still have a lot of firepower on the Washington Post sports staff. And a lot of these kids now, to me, I'm 56, 57, they're some of the best, brightest young journalists in the country. And I think that they will be without jobs, probably not for long, as good as they are, but even for any amount of time is just mind-boggling. But I just want to make sure that we can all spend time together if and when there is a final resolution.
Well, it's very nice to say. I would say, Andy, that if the Post sports section does disappear, the center of gravity, the literal center of gravity of the D.C. sports ecosystem collapses.
Absolutely.
Like a black hole, like a dark star, where it's like, what's going to matter anymore?
Right. And like I talked about it with you, there was a game where Georgetown played, and it was not only covered by the Associated Press, but it was covered by AI by the Associated Press. And Ed Cooley, the coach, at the end of the game had thrown a water bottle in the stands.
Yes.
Which I found out about on social media. And my instinct was, go to the Washington Post, because someone like Gene Wong has probably covered the game. And he will have complete details along with quotes from Cooley as to what happened. No. You go to the Post, and it's an AI story from the Associated Press for a home game for Georgetown, because Gene was covering a Maryland game in Charlottesville. That was tough.
I mean, we queued off of all kinds of stuff with the Post, the coverage, the stories, every little quote that would come out from a coach or a player or whomever. That had to be dug out by you guys. and gals at the Post to cover the games, cover the teams, interview the players, and it would feed us in radio for weeks and months at a time. Like, I can think of a couple stories off the top of my head. Sally Jenkins writing about Kwame Brown.
Yeah. That was a magazine story, but yeah.
Still, it's under the Post banner.
Right. Correct.
You remember that story, Gene?
Of course.
Sally dug in and spent several weeks with Kwame Brown, the former number one pick of the Bullets then, or Wizards, excuse me.
Wizards. It was a Wizards.
Wizards.
Yes.
And she discovered that this, you know, otherwise innocent teenager who just didn't have enough guidance to, okay, you're a pro now, was throwing his suits in the corner of his apartment because he didn't know how to clean them.
You know, he called his agent and he said, I need more suits. And he said, we just bought 10 of them about
what
three
happened?
Weeks ago. He goes, they're there in the corner.
He didn't
treated
know
it like
how
sweat clothes.
Yeah, right, he didn't know how to take them to the dry cleaner.
Right, exactly.
That he would often eat fast food and Popeyes as a regular thing, as a supposedly well-conditioned athlete.
Well, that's just the brilliance of Sally. She can dig deep and find stuff like that that you just don't find anywhere now on the internet. Then and now, and we have reporters today who do the exact same thing, and it would be a shame if their talents were not part of the Washington Post going forward.
The other story that fed us for weeks was when Mike Wise broke how Danny Boy, after a terrible loss, got super blitzed up in the suite at FedEx.
No. It went back to they flew to Detroit for the game. They broke the Detroit Lions 19-game losing streak.
That's right.
They go back at the hangar in Dulles, and he's hanging out with Carl Swanson and Vinny Serrato, and he's having some shots, I guess.
He's pissed off, humiliated, getting drunk, which Snyder would do quite a lot, according to everyone that would talk to us. We couldn't really say it on the air. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit inflammatory. And they decided they were going to fly out that night to go talk to Shanahan, who had recently been fired in Denver, and convince him to come coach.
They slept at his house. They showed up at midnight.
Slept at his house. Like that is a story that has to be, like, you have to pin it in the annals of DC sports history.
Yeah.
So crucial.
Well, we would face this criticism in radio. How come you guys don't break any stories? Well, we don't have the horses and the resources which you guys had. And so, you know, that's to take nothing away from your reporting, but that's what you guys did. We would react to the reporting.
Yes.
And really, we're not really a news organization. We were something else. And the flow of information changed dramatically, of course, with the internet. But even as late as 2004, when Joe Gibbs came back, I remember the late, great King, George Michael.
George Michael. Yes.
On his sportscast.
For those that don't know, George Michael, sports director at Channel 4, inventor of the Sports Machine, which was one of the first sort of national highlight shows that would air after the 11:30 local news East Coast markets and was distributed around the country. He was the guy that said, let's take you to rodeo days in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Right. It was really a resource for people who didn't have cable TV. If you wanted a sports highlight show, it was syndicated. It was run by station. So
he was the sports director and sports guy at Channel 4. Yeah. Big personality, bigger ego. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the closest thing to Ron Burgundy that actually, right, Gene, that walked the earth. He was that close to Ron Burgundy. And he was called the King.
He was good. He was very popular, and so he had done a show with Gibbs, and so, you know, he knew Joe Gibbs well. And the Post used to put out what was called a Bulldog Edition, and it would come out at 10 o'clock at night. And so George, on his 11:20 sportscast, holds up the Washington Post, and it says Joe Gibbs is coming back, and he says, this is not going to happen. I have a personal friendship with Joe Gibbs, and he is not coming back to the Redskins. The next day, George was in Charlotte interviewing Joe Gibbs about coming back.
God bless Joe Gibbs. And George Michael. I mean, but that's the thing about the sports section in the print form, where you can't hold up an internet or your iPad when the Nats win the World Series or the Caps win the Stanley Cup.
No, you cannot.
That's different.
You can't frame your iPhone, Gene.
Yeah, no, you
when
can't.
When something big happens and you want to commemorate
it. That's right.
Yeah. I think our role was, you know, guys like Gene and everyone else, they would spend days and weeks getting the athletes and coaches to trust them because they saw them a lot in the locker rooms and at the games. And they would say, hey, you know, thinking about writing a feature. If you ever wanted to sit down with me, let me know. And that might take 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, who knows how many times of gently asking to have Kwame go, okay, sure, you can follow me around. And then you would get the story and then they would write it. We don't, you know, we don't have time for that, as every day we got to put the coal into the steam engine, right, Andy? That is sports radio. But it was like the Post people, and this is true of all print journalists, they were the dogs in the weeds flushing out the ducks. We were the guys back in the blind with the shotguns, right?
Yeah.
Plow, 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 plow. Yeah,
right.
And let me tell you, when you guys would flush out something really good or interesting, like the Kwame story or like Dan going to Denver, we couldn't load the shells fast enough, right? And I appreciate that from you guys, because that's hard work doing what you guys did. But if we don't have that anymore, where is it going to come from?
There's still outlets that do that kind of reporting. I mean, Athletics still has feature writers, takeout writers, guys who the men and women who go and write 10,000 words on an Olympic figure skater or a boxer who's trying to make it big out of nowhere. I mean, that still exists. It's just not going to be as pervasive as it was.
They're all boutique shops, though, and you have to go find them, which is part of the problem. The Post was always there.
Right, but here's another problem. As two men are 50s and I'm 60s, I read a story this weekend about a professor who teaches a film class.
Oh, yeah, I saw
that. You saw that? And he gives he has them, all they have to do is watch a film.
and they can't even do that. This generation can't just watch.
And there's a quiz at the end of the film that they were supposed to have watched at home or their iPads or whatever. They don't watch the whole film. They can't answer simple questions about what happened at the end.
Yeah, the quiz was, how did it end? Yeah. They're like, oh, shit, I didn't get to the end.
Yeah, we used to not read chapters of books. That's different. Not being able to watch a film.
But what I'm saying is that would transfer down to young readers who don't want to read along. I mean, some of the greatest writing in the Washington Post is done by what Tony calls a takeout writer.
That's right.
And they write long features like the Sally one we were talking about. But this generation, I don't know if they're going to invest the time to do it. I mean, when you see a story now on the internet, it tells you approximately how long it takes to read it. A lot of people go, 20 minutes. Forget it.
20? 2 minutes.
2 minutes.
Well, some of them are long.
Nobody's got time for 2 minutes.
Well, I subscribe to something called the Long Sunday Read, which is put out by Don Van Natta. And he collects,
I love Don Van Natta.
He collects those long stories, but each of them has a time thing that, some of them are long, like 50 minutes. And I like those. I love that. But I'm old, so I don't know.
Well, didn't USA Today kind of, weren't they the originators of that short form story? It was called McNews back then, right? And they no stories jumped. Yeah, it was like five paragraphs.
Remember the boxes for USA Today?
Absolutely.
Now you'd have to put 400 quarters in to buy a paper. But when it was like 50 cents, the box was designed to look like a television set. That was their it was like a paper for TV.
You're talking about the National?
No, the
USA Today.
USA Today. National's another story.
So the National was a newspaper that was all sports back in the late 80s.
Yeah, it was 1990 to 91. It lasted, I think, a year and a half.
Okay, printed all sports newspaper, which it was a great idea. It had a lot of distribution problems. I think it was printed in like Mexico and they had ship it to the States, and it cost a lot more than a normal newspaper. I think it cost like 50 or 75 cents.
$1,
or maybe even a dollar. Yeah. My college buddy, Dave Jenkins, who was our goaltender in our floor hockey league, would go get a National newspaper. But he would get two, and he'd make sure to close the thing and then put another dollar in to get it. And I'm like, dude, just take two. And he goes, no, man, I want to support this so it can survive.
Well, it was pre-internet.
It did not survive.
It essentially became ESPN.com. What you see, it was the National, but the internet doesn't come in until the late 90s. So it was, for its time, it was great, but the distribution was a real problem.
Well, I applaud Gene's Gallo's humor and or solitude of mind of, I know this may end any time, so I'm going to keep going. I reference the classic meme of First Time with James Franco. I forget what movie this is in, where he's on the hangman's noose at the gallow and he turns to the camera and says, what, first time doing this? Like, is that meme, Andy, not emblematic of the radio business?
That
these things happen, that things collapse and go away?
Well, I was in a format change 1983, and I knew about it a month ahead, but there was a memo that went out during the afternoon, said everybody report to the, it was a radio studio upstairs, TV downstairs. They needed a room big enough to fire 35 people at once.
Oh,
so
God.
We were all called down to the TV studio where chairs were set up. And
when they called you down, did you know you were cattle to the slaughter?
Yeah, and it was a guy who had come in as the general manager to replace the other general manager who didn't want to fire everybody. And his name was Marty Greenberg. He was, you know, a member of the tribe.
One of your people.
But yeah.
Not your proudest moment, but hey, you know, someone's got to do it.
And he gets up there and he's like hemming and hawing and talking about, you know, vacation stuff. It takes him a while to get to the point.
And you're fired.
But so, I was 23, 24, single. And I'm looking around at people with families. And, you know, even then you're worried about health benefits and things like that.
Remember what the GM at 670, or no, not 670.
570.
570 said right before they laid off a bunch of you guys.
Yeah.
Quote.
Buy houses, have babies. We're good.
Buy the houses, Gene, have the babies. And that was how many months before they laid everyone off?
Six, maybe.
6 months. Just shameless.
Well, I will tell you that it's a little more wrenching now for us that stuck around after the last round of buyouts, thinking that, okay, people took the buyouts. They're going to go their own way. We're going to kind of regroup, and we're going to have some vision to go forward. And apparently that's not the case.
There's no vision.
No, I remember that day when we had mass buyout departure parties, and Steve Goff and Sally Jenkins and Dan Steinberg were among those who were leaving. And it was just...
Have buyout regret, do you?
I mean, we'll see this week. I will get back to you on that. Can I get back to you on that?
Yeah. Yeah, oftentimes surviving these things, Andy, is almost worse than being fired, because you know you're left behind on a crippled ship.
Right.
And you just don't know how for long. That's kind of like a handful of guys at the station in Milwaukee that are still there. There's like 5 guys left out of like 15. Mm. And they're doing one show in the morning, and that's it. And they're like, one of the guys said to me, he was like, yeah, I just talked to one of the sales guys. He had no idea we were doing sports on AM 620 or AM 920. Like, I go, no idea, huh? And he's like, yeah, no idea.
Shipwreck.
I'm like, that is depressing right there. You're there trying to put a good show on the air, and you walk over to sales. Oh, what are you doing here?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've reached a point in my career, I don't have to worry about, you know, moving up or any of that. So I'm doing a show that I look at as satisfying me, and that's good enough. Because one thing, I haven't had to worry about ratings because we don't have any. And
do you not subscribe, or do you get the ratings?
Well, they do, but they don't care. I mean, there's 3 people that work at the station, so it's okay.
Is there room for a fourth?
I hope so.
I'm currently looking for work.
It might be.
They're looking for a program director, too, because the last one retired.
Did really?
Yeah, Bill Hess retired.
When?
A month ago.
Shit, let's get, who's the new guy?
I don't know. I keep asking.
Let's make you the new guy and hire me.
No, but it's, you got to run.
And then you and I can do
you
a gotta show
run,
together.
You got to run the station that's on your side of the aisle, and I'm not interested in running that one.
Oh, please, Andy. Come on. It's not hard. Yeah. All right, let me be the GM. Let me be the PD, and I'll co-host a show with you.
Okay, well, you can.
Where approach. Do I apply?
I'll give you the name.
Okay.
Yeah. Good
Send
guy,
it my too. Way.
I like the GM.
Try to figure it out. So the Post is sending 3 reporters to Italy for the Olympics. That's great.
Yes, Barry Svaluga, Rick Mace, and Les Carpenter, our lead Olympics writer.
Good. I have a real fondness for the Winter Olympics. Growing up as a kid, I always loved to see the exotic locales when they used to. Now, I'm glad they're going back to a good place like, you know, Milan.
Cortina
in Italy, which is truly it's in the Italian Alps.
Yes.
Yeah, which is gorgeous. You know, I'm used to like Innsbruck and Calgary, places that deserve it, not Sochi, Russia, which was basically a summer resort that Putin, you know, strong-armed into being this quasi-winter location. Excited for that.
Speaking of newspapers, she's a friend. Christine Brennan, she had a great career already, but that was the skyrocket Tanya Nancy, 94.
She caught the wave of all waves.
And she reported, she wrote a book about it. And not only that, the tape delay of their meeting, you know, their competition together, is one of the highest rated shows ever on television.
Okay. All right, let's eat our soup, and then we'll enjoy our wonderful power lunch here at the Palm. I got the chicken parm. So did Andy, which is interesting enough. They make the best chicken parm here. Gene, what did you get?
I got the chop-chop salad because my wife gets half. She loves it.
So. Oh, very nice. Chop-chop salad as well. Come on down to the Palm, Tyson's Corner, Virginia. They have shoveled the driveways here, although it's still piles and piles of snow and snit. And ice. It's like Ice Planet Hoth here in D.C. Power Lunch continues after this.
Studies show that 100% of everybody in the world wants to curl up indoors and do nothing because it's so darn cold out there. That's why many people are turning to Bombas, whose pillowy plush slippers and warm merino wool socks have been said to be the most comfortable in the history of feet. Bombas products have been found to boost coziness by up to 1 million percent. Okay, enough fake statistics, but could Bombas socks and slippers really be the cure? Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code audio.
We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh no. With MyBookie and its cash out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets, or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit, and remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo, and grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag. All right, we're back here. Palm, what a delicious lunch it was. That chicken parm was 10 of 10, no notes, as they say. Did you enjoy yours?
Oh, fabulous. Love it.
Did you also say that you woke up today thinking of this meal?
Actually, when did you text me?
But I texted you saying, hey, would you come to the Palm?
Yeah, that's the first thought is chicken parm.
It always is. Did you know, though, that this month, well, last month, every Sunday they had chicken parm at the cost of $19.26 in celebration of the Palm's 100th anniversary.
Wow. Oh, very nice.
Yes.
Very nice. I like that. Yeah. Anyway, so Facebook, A, it's a lot of politics, sadly. Secondly, my quote friends are on there, and they're not really my friends, Gene. They're people I went to high school with. I have fond high school memories of them, but I haven't talked to them in 25, 30 years.
Right.
And then they have the most wonderful families, and they go on the most amazing vacations.
Sure.
And my natural instinct is to say, fuck them. And that's on me. I need to be better myself. But what I'm saying is that Facebook triggers that. It triggers the worst parts of me, the envy, the sort of life comparisons.
Really?
In a little way. Really? It triggers a little bit of it. Sure it does.
I don't look at it that way.
Well, you have a great, healthy attitude about most things in life.
Right.
And that's great. I look up to you for that. I try to channel that with you.
But you got this anger that's...
I don't have anger. No, I don't have anger. But at times I'm like, look at that family. The fuck? But we all know, Gene, it's a curated presentation of people's lives.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad I have no footprint on Facebook. I look at my wife's page if I need to get in touch, if I want her to get in touch with some of my friends that way.
Right.
Or else I would do something that I don't think anyone ever does now. Call them. That's a novel idea if you want to know what's going on in someone's life.
Yet some people, younger people, think it's rude.
Yeah.
What are you doing just calling me out of the blue? That's crazy.
God forbid.
God forbid. Well, I wanted to talk to you for 5 minutes.
The one thing about, because then I have grandchildren, you guys aren't there yet, but rather than, remember you used to have pictures in your wallet? Now I can share them on Facebook
right.
all the time. Yeah,
right. And that, you know what? There is good to that, because if you're part of a large extended family, who doesn't want to see your aunt's grandchild? Yeah. Like, oh, wow, she's getting really big. That's kind of
exactly.
cool. Yeah. So it's not bad. It's all in the right moderation. By the way, Gene writes for the Post, and he does everything. He goes everywhere. He writes about everything. I love that about you. Do you want to promote anything that you do? Any side hustles? Any way to reach you? Because I want to give you the platform here.
Well, you can reach me. Well, you used to be able to reach me at my X account at Gene_Wang, W-A-N-G, until it was hacked recently.
Oh, no.
And I've been trying to get in touch with X support, and goodness, they're so quick about getting back to you. It's been a week and it's radio silence.
I had mine hacked and I had to have an inside connection from some guy who was like the head of some county, Washington County in Wisconsin. And he had some backdoor to someone at Twitter. This is before Musk took it over. Yeah. It's outrageous that a lot of us rely on it as a professional tool,
yes,
even if it's just one small low-level tool. And that even if you're paying for it like I am, that you can't get quick resolution of, okay, you've been hacked, here's what we're going to do. Confirm you're you, we're going to set up this, da-da-da-da-da. If anyone knows how to get Gene out of Twitter hell, please let us know, all right?
It pained me because I was doing the Lakers-Wizards game and I had some stuff to say and I couldn't say it. I just had to talk to the people sitting next to me on press row. What good does that do?
What good does that do? You're a proud graduate as well of Georgetown University.
I am. Well, I was proud when I was there. Recently, not so much.
Okay, so I want to talk about Georgetown hoops for a second.
Okay.
I had forgotten just how bad it got for them. I went and looked at their grid of results, and I'm like, holy shit, Ewing went 0-19 in league.
You would think, and like, then there by was accident, you'd win a game, one game.
And then it was backed up with two more years of 2-18, 2-18.
Yeah.
So you add those up. That's like 4-56.
He had one run at the right time, and it was during the pandemic, and they won the Big East tournament. That's the only way he got to the NCAAs. The other years, he was not going to come close, and they weren't going to come close that year unless they won the Big East, which was an automatic. And other than that, he was a disaster. And, you know, it was the end of the Thompson era. Like, when it came time that John Thompson III had to go, most people went, what? Are you kidding me?
Right.
And remember, Joey Meyer, Ray Meyer's son, succeeded him and did well. He was part of the, you know, recruiting process when Ray had like a resurgence at the end of his career, getting like Aguirre and Cummings and guys like that.
Yep.
And then he bottomed out. And it was so bitter that Ray cut off all communication with the school that he helped build. And everybody was afraid, oh, that happens with Big John. So the compromise was Ewing. It wasn't really going to be anybody outside the family. And Patrick had earned it at that point. He'd been in a, you know, it wasn't like he just stepped off the playing court. He'd been an NBA assistant like 15 years, but it didn't work out.
Look at this grid here. You see the JT 3 years, and for those of you that are confused, this is not Big John. This is not the John Thompson with the towel over his shoulder from the 80s with the Hoya teams that were iconic nationally. This is his son, JT 3, and what a run this is. Look at this.
Final
NIT
four.
Quarters, yeah. Division I, Sweet 16, Final Four, second round, first round. I mean, consistently there and relevant.
And knocked out early. They had high seeds where they were beaten.
Yeah, Florida Gulf Coast was probably a pretty mortal wound.
Steph Curry beat him. You know,
Davidson dropped 30 on him. I remember that game, yep.
So that gave way to Ewing, and Ewing's first year, a couple good, decent-ish years, but then starting in 21, post-pandemic, 0-19, 2-18, 2-18.
League, yeah.
In league, and that's just unbelievable. And, you know, Ed Cooley had a decent year last year, but then this year they're terrible again.
I have a good feeling about Cooley. I think that he can recruit the right guys. You saw what he did at Providence. He got them to Sweet 16. I mean, Providence, that's not a school you typically think about as a team that's going to be in the NCAA tournament consistently. I think it's, from what I understand from the higher-ups in the athletic department, they're pleased with the direction it's going in.
Really?
So, yes, be given... You compare it to what Ewing did. Come on, I mean, this
is of course,
like,
but he lost a game recently where he talked about how blessed he was that he was coaching Georgetown and they were at that time like 3-9 in the league or something like that.
Yeah,
that's not what they're paying him $7 million a year to do.
Don't you hate that, Andy, when coaches do the well with everything else going on in the world?
Right, and he's right, but in the context of what he's charged with doing, winning games, he's failing.
No, agreed. I agree with that. I think that they gave him one cycle of recruiting. So this is his third year, right? The first year, it's none of your players.
Right.
Second, so one more year. if there's not a clear improvement. We're talking like a threat to go to the NCAA tournament, competing at the upper tier of the Big East, then they may make some decisions.
Well, I mean, he's in the Big East, which is where Kevin Willard ran, because that's where all the money is before, as Scott Van Pelt put it, taking a dump on the front step of the of the house.
Yeah.
And he's winning because of that. But also, Cooley's in the Big East, so there's no football money, relatively speaking. You're right. Year four, he's got to do something.
Gene, can't Georgetown be St. John's, essentially?
Yeah, I mean, you mean St. John's last year when they were like one of the best teams in the country, or like
They're 9-1 this year, in league, so that's not terrible. I'm saying, can't they be that type of program?
They can. The problem is, and I've had this discussion with many people from my generation who are like, well, it's Georgetown. Like, Alonzo went there, Dikembe went there, Allen Iverson, Patrick Ewing, etc. I'm like, well, when you go to someone's house now and you talk to those kids about those guys, their parents know who they are.
Yeah.
The kids don't really know who they are. So you're not bringing that Georgetown product like, oh, look at all the great history. The kids have no idea about that history. It's much like the Commanders when you say, this team actually won Super Bowls at one point. This generation has no idea.
Well, and Big John got those guys to commit because they believed Big John could get them to the league and they would make gazillions of dollars.
And they did. He was great with big men.
They did make gazillions of dollars.
And he turned them over to David Falk. And David
Falk
had contracts where if one guy got more money, the other guy got more money. It was a great system. But also, kids didn't know what Georgetown was. Those kids were walking around the depressed areas in starter jackets. As Feinstein used to tell a great story. He said that the players said, yeah, we're going to look at one of these HBCU schools, Georgetown. Because they didn't know it was a Jesuit school, you know, the probably 95% of the student body's white, right? You know,
but that's because, unfortunately, Big John never had a white guy on that team for years and years and years, not a single one. Yeah, and there's always room for a white guy who's good from the end of the driveway, as I like to call
it. The irony is that after Big John, Craig Escherich took over the program, a white coach, right?
I know. But in terms of just like, you know, it doesn't hurt to have just a white kid who can shoot like crazy. A Jerry McNamara.
Guys
like that, you know. Fred Hoiberg, the mayor of Ames. Like, these are dudes, they can't do much, but shit, from 25 feet, look out.
Like Fletcher Lawyer from Purdue, who I saw yesterday hit 7 threes against Maryland. There you go.
Purdue is a very interesting team in that they've got great white guards who are like Indiana Mr. Basketballs who've been there forever.
Yep.
And they don't have much future in the league, in my opinion. They're not NBA players. They'll be in the NBA, but they're not going to do much. But as college players, Gene,
they're fantastic.
That backcourt is stacked.
It is the best in the country. Let me go back a second, though, to the NBA and Georgetown. Ed Cooley, we have to remember, sent two players from last year's roster to the NBA, Thomas Sorber and Micah Peavy. So he can go to a recruit's house and say, look, these guys are in the association. They're playing in the NBA, not on a G League team, on the big boy roster. So if you come to Georgetown, I can get you there if you want to commit. That can be a selling point.
All right, let's talk fatherhood for a second. Gene is a new father of how many?
Well, kind of new. My daughter is 6. Just
6 years old.
Yes.
Okay, so a newish father, and beautiful that you got it done with your lovely bride who's younger than you.
Yes, she is. She is younger than me, and fatherhood has been the greatest thing in the world, although I will say this, last week with no school for an entire week, and today, again, no school.
Outrage.
Thank you, Fairfax County. Outrageous. It is outrageous.
Right.
I don't want to be that guy, you know, get off my doorstep, but how can you not have school a week after a snow day?
Yeah.
That's
insane.
In New York, they were done. They were going back the next day, if I'm not mistaken.
I know. And Andy started defending the bureaucrats by going, well, you know, the sidewalks aren't fully clear. There's snow piles. And I go, adapt, adjust, walk on the snow.
Adapt. But
with it.
We live in a litigious society, and a fifth grade kid walking to school falls and breaks his arm. There's a lawsuit.
Then we'll never go to school again.
Well, yeah.
School needs to be a priority. School is essential. Mm-hmm. It's a very important
my
on
son's
so
a
many
teacher.
Levels.
You're
not
preaching
just for the
choir
kids,
here.
But for the parents. It's essential for the parents.
Yeah. It'll work. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And I understand that you also, your daughter was IVF, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So that was a hard fought.
It was literally birth. The last embryo. the very last embryo.
Okay.
And we were like, it was so hard for us. We went through a lot of stuff, as you can imagine.
A lot of drama, heartache, money.
Much heartache.
Yeah.
I will tell you, I remember we had our son was stillborn. I remember I got the call from my wife. I was at the Big East tournament. I was just covered Georgetown, but John Thompson III losing to DePaul in the first round. And I got the call saying, something bad is happening. You got to fly back.
So you were not even there for your child who ended up being stillborn.
I arrived in time for the end. So it was heart-wrenching.
So that's a perfect entree to this line of discussion because it's come up again. And that is apparently, according to Diana Rossini, Andy, of The Athletic, the Vikings, now former GM, Kwezi Mfume, Adolfo Mfume, requested 2 weeks off of paternity leave, which wasn't even a thing when I was having kids.
Same with me. Yep.
And he took it, and that some around the league and some in the office of the Vikings were a little bit taken aback, like, oh. And that has now sparked this whole discussion of, how dare you even infringe upon work-life balance, and he did the right thing, and you, like, there's a lot of dad shaming,
right? But
going
this,
on
this,
right
this
now.
This was the piling on. That was in training camp that he missed the 2 weeks. So the season played out. If they made the playoffs, I think he still has his job.
Well, they of course, if they didn't let Sam Darnold walk out the door, they keep his job.
So, but I mean, if J.J. McCarthy has a great year and they make the playoffs, I think he's still employed.
They just gave him an extension, too, by the way. Yeah. So they had felt good about him until just recently. The larger point is that, and then Mike McDonald, I guess, got shit because he admitted he gets about 30 minutes of time during the season to see his son. How dare you? Well, his son's a year old.
Yeah.
One. Okay? And he's got all offseason to be with the kid. And he can see the kid at night. And on off days, like, to me, Andy, I just don't subscribe to the you've got to be there every minute of every day theory of being a good dad. I just don't.
Well, I think when you take one of those jobs, you have an understanding. You know, that when Joe Gibbs retired the first time in 93, he said, yeah, you know, I was spending so much time. I came home to kiss my sons goodnight and I realized one of them needed to shave. So. That's how long it had been. And he was only 52. And then when they were grown, he came back and all that. But, yeah, it is something that you take on. And it's often said that people who achieve greatness rarely have balanced lives. Now, you know, what we got from Cignetti was kind of refreshing. I don't want my assistants working late. You know, we do the work during the day. A lot of coaches don't think that way.
That's a slightly separate discussion about how much do you want your coaches to grind.
Yeah.
This is more of a, you got to be with your infant children right at birth.
That's true.
Like, I don't know what I would do, Gene, for 2 weeks if I took two
weeks. Did you have paternity leave?
I did. Not as long as Dan Steinberg. I believe Dan Steinberg took 6 months.
Six months?
6 months.
What did he do for 6 months?
I would love to know that. I bet he played some golf.
I mean, change every diaper every day. That leaves 23 hours and 15 minutes left to do stuff that you can't do as a mom.
I believe I took maybe 6 weeks, something like that.
6 weeks?
Yeah.
Okay, well, good for you. But now your situation.
Yes.
A bit different because of the hard-fought road.
Yes.
You told me, Andy, to look up Babygate, David Williams, 1993 Houston Oilers. Luckily, I didn't even bother because I've got you right here, full of chicken parm, to be my Wikipedia.
So this was a big thing when this happened in 93. David Williams was a starting tackle for the Houston Oilers, who later became the Tennessee Titans. And they were good. They finished 12-4 that year. And his wife went into labor on Saturday. The team left on a charter flight from Houston to New England on Saturday. They left without him. And apparently there was it must have been a 1 o'clock game, no way to get him there in time, commercial flights, whatever. So he missed the game. Bud Adams, old school Bud Adams, who started the Houston Oilers in 1960, docked him a week's pay, $111,000, because he didn't show up for the game. They still won 28-14 without him. But this became a major hot button. And at the time, Sam Huff was doing a lot of stuff, not just the Redskins games on the radio, but was doing shows with us. And Sam said, you know, when my wife got into labor, I dropped her off at the hospital and went to practice. So there was that. And then there was the chattering herd on the other side. Eventually, they came up with a plan that, you know, that wouldn't happen again. And I guess the Players Association didn't even have enough leverage to make sure he got his game check at that time. Now they would. But
you know, sports is a very different beast because of the fact that, you know, these games, especially playoff games, are very finite. Wasn't there a Nats pitcher who missed a start in a playoff game in St. Louis because of that kind of situation, I seem to recall? I'll look it up while you guys are whirring away with your
I'm not sure
spinning
that,
beach balls.
Here's what I would say, though. When you are about to meet your maker, do you think you're going to say, man, I wish I had worked more. I wish I'd
been more.
Or do you think, I wish I'd been there for my kids more.
I hear you on that. But as I also like to say, and I've said this to Andy many a time when the mics are off, and I'll say it now the mics are on.
Yes.
This is a marathon. Pace yourself. I'm going to be with my kids forever in one way, shape, or form. So I don't need to necessarily be there all the time, per se.
Yeah.
That's all. What would you like? I'll take cheesecake to go. That's what our guys usually get us. Okay, Gene, same thing?
I'm all good.
No, okay. That sounds good. That sounds great.
Yeah, I do agree that, you know, you don't need to spend more time. Yes, Daniel Hudson missed game one. He was our game one starter.
Really?
In 2019, I can't believe I remembered that and you didn't.
Well, I remembered Sandy Koufax not pitching on Yom Kippur.
That's right.
So that was a World Series.
Well, that's just your super strong Jew memory going on right there.
That is the most significant. Let me tell you something.
No comment.
No comment.
No. That is the most significant act by a Jewish athlete in history.
Yes.
That he refused to pitch on the holiest day of the year. Wasn't even that religious, but felt like he needed to be an example. And forever, he's 90 years old now, looks great. He will be remembered for that.
I kept waiting for Yao Ming not to play on the Lunar New Year, but that never happened.
Is that a big deal for you guys?
Lunar? Huge deal.
Really?
We celebrate it every year.
What year? Is it on New Year's Day?
It's on February 18th. It's coming up.
Of course.
Yeah.
Now, Gene, what is your heritage? Is it?
It's Chinese.
Pure Chinese?
Yes.
My parents
both from mainland China.
Nice.
Yes.
Oh, your parents immigrated here?
Yes, they did. And they met at the University of Maryland, and they both got their PhDs at Georgetown. So, and then that's where I was born.
That's awesome. My best man at my wedding, Andy Lee, Dr. Andy Lee, who lived over at Woodside Lake neighborhood with a nice pool. I spent so many hours in the pool back there, and his sweet, beautiful Chinese mom, Chinese parents, also immigrants here to the States, ran a Chinese restaurant in downtown next to where the MCI Center is. We'd go down there in high school.
Oh, I'm sure it was fantastic.
Oh, we were just gorgeous. It was great. And that's when the neighborhood was sketchy.
That's what, yeah.
So we'd go down there like, all right, just ignore all the sketchiness, get into the restaurant, and we're good to go. Mm-hmm. That he was the best man at my wedding, and I was dubbed like her third son. She would say, "You're my third son," because I was over at their house so much. And I learned a little bit of Chinese from their house assistant, their housekeeper.
Yes.
Mofatu was what I was called. And I kept hearing her say Mofatu. And I go, "Andy, what is that?" He laughs. He goes, "Basically means a layabout, a no good." In Mandarin, Mofatu.
Well, at least they thought to name you something,
yeah, right?
That's
exactly.
That's an honor in
but
itself.
No good layabout. Right.
And let's be honest, Mrs. Mock was her name. She wasn't wrong. That's what I did. I was a layabout. Okay, I came across this on my timeline, and I just wanted to play it again for you guys. This is Sugar Ray, no, this is Leonard Hearn's 1985 first round, one of the most incredible.
And the pace is up-tempo right at the opening bell.
I believe this is Barry Tompkins on the call.
Hearn's working that jab. He has a very quick jab.
Caesar's Palace.
Yeah, yeah.
And he caught Hagler with two good jabs and a right hand that might have hurt Hagler. Tremendous pace in the first round.
I expect this guy. Both guys are going.
Probably the greatest grab in boxing history.
No nonsense at all here.
Is that Mills Lane? Or no, Richard Steele, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
What a pace.
This pace goes on for the entire 3 minutes of the round, where it's
it never stops. Literally, haymaker
after haymaker. It looks like a Rocky movie in that there's no bob and weave. There's no real defense. It's just wail on each other. Will we ever get anything this good again, Andy?
No, we don't have boxing anymore.
Yes, we do.
Come on. So I will tell you, boxing is one of my favorite sports to cover because you get as close as you can to the athletes and you really get there's no team. It's you against the other guy. And it's the most exciting 3 minutes that there is in sports to me. And that was the heyday of when I grew up watching the Kings.
How old were you when this happened? Because I'm 57. You're?
Yeah, 57.
Okay, so we're the same age. So we remember this vaguely. Yeah.
Yes. I remember the war of Sugar Ray Leonard and Hearns in June 12, 87. That was my birthday. So I remember all those fights, Duran, Hagler, Hearns, Leonard. I mean,
I predate that. I go to the three Ali Frazier fights.
Sure.
And in my lifetime, there will be nothing that will top Ali Frazier 1 in 1971 at Madison Square Garden, where the two fighters, now I was only 12 at the time, I didn't really understand money that much, but they were going to split $5 million. And the $5 million was put up by Jack Kent Cook, because there were very few people in the country that had that kind of money.
Big scratch back then.
Yeah. It was like, oh, if you won, you won $2.5 million? You'd never have to work again, you know? And then the fight actually outran the hype. And it was weeks and weeks of mainstream coverage. Like Walter Cronkite had it as a big priority in his newscast.
Right.
Life magazine put it on the cover. That used to be a big deal. And so when it happened, and Ali was this mythical figure, you know, he'd been banned from boxing for 3 years. And when I heard he lost, I went, oh, my God, Ali lost?
Yeah.
That was
unthinkable.
Huge.
So here was the last 30 seconds of the round. This is incredible. This is the last 30 seconds of a three-minute round.
Yeah. That's Sugar Ray, right? You got to pace yourself.
I believe so, yeah.
Of Marvin Hagler. Again, we can't quite tell where it's coming from while Hagler continues to dish out punishment.
Unbelievable. I mean.
And now Hearns bounces right back. This may be the most brutal even round you've ever seen in boxing.
Amazing they were still standing at the end.
That's good shit right there. Yeah. So, it spawned this as a homework topic for you guys, which is, what are the most electrifying 60 seconds in sports history or less? It's not a single highlight, but a period of sustained excitement or mayhem in the course of play. A highlight with a crazy reaction doesn't count. So like, say, Leitner's shot against Kentucky, that's a singular
Hail
highlight.
Hail Mary. Yeah.
Okay, or Hail Mary where the reaction is great. No. And a fight like off the court, like Malice in the Palace, that doesn't count because that's not in the run of play. I would say this, Hagler-Hearns 85 bout is one of those. I have 1, 2, 3, 4 others. I'm going to hit you with them, and then if there's anything left, you guys can chime in. Let's go to Virginia. NCAA tournament against Purdue. This was an incredible play.
I was there. I covered that game.
You were there covering. Okay. Yes. 70-68, Purdue up 2, Virginia at the line, missed free throw.
A race for it. Into the hands of Clark. Got a chance to win it here. Up the front is Diakite for the win. Yes! From the tie, Diakite squares it at 70.
Now, Brian Anderson's an excellent announcer, but it's probably haunting him that he called it for the win when it was actually for the tie.
Yes.
But still, to have that sequence where you couldn't believe that Kihei Clark ran the ball down going the opposite way with the clock winding down and then getting it to the game winner or game tying basket.
That was the iconic moment of the Tony Bennett era at Virginia. Probably the iconic moment of Virginia basketball and sports, period.
Better than the title?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, more that they don't get to the title because of that moment, you know? Yeah. And the fact that Diakite, who's not known as a jump shooter, makes that shot at the buzzer.
Right.
I mean, it wasn't like it was Ty Jerome or Kyle Guy who hit threes from Steph Curry range.
And he had to know that he had very little time, so it was a quick little shot.
Yeah.
It wasn't a full set. It was like, oh, got it.
And it went in. And the perspective on that is that it's happened the year after they lose
in the
UMBC.
Correct. Yes, exactly. And then they won the title, which was great. Yeah. 2009 Stanley Cup Finals Game 7 in Detroit. Red Wings, Penguins. The final minute of this period was insane. As Marc-Andre Fleury made save after save.
A tremendous save by Fleury. They've done it. The Penguins have done it. Sidney Crosby and the Penguins have won.
Playoff hockey's great.
That one's better. Game 7, Stanley Cup Finals.
2-1 game right there. That was only a 20-second clip, but the entire final minute was the most tense, oh my God, because Detroit was putting on this incredible rush.
Yeah, I think hockey's the best playoffs. I mean, I think we can all agree at watching, like, of all the four major pro sports, like, there's nothing like Game 7.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah.
Then there's this. Jimmy Connors, U.S. Open against Paul Haarhuis, where he survives, I think I counted, five overheads from Haarhuis before delivering the down-the-line winner before a crowd there wasn't the Arthur Ashe Center yet, I believe.
I think it was.
Called
was Arthur Ashe Stadium? I think that,
was it still there? Okay.
Yes.
But, I mean, nobody resonated with the New York tennis crowd like Jimmy freaking Connors.
That year, 90 and 91, he was doing the Midnight Miracles.
Like, yeah, here.
Five sets late in the night.
This rally is amazing. Here's the first overhead. Not hard enough. Another one. Not hard enough. A third. Nope. A fourth. Nope. Uh-oh, here comes Jimbo.
Down the line. Ooh.
And then he does the double fist pump right in front of the crowd. Look at that showmanship right there. Pretty darn good. And then my favorite in terms of, okay, the most electrifying 60 seconds or less moments in sports, and this had an impact on me as a kid, 1976 Olympics, Winter Olympics, Innsbruck, Austria, with the great Franz Klammer trying to make up time. Frank Gifford on the call, Andy.
Oh, yeah, he did everything for them.
He knows Brucey is in first place. He knows what he has to do. You can be sure with all the pressure that's riding on his shoulders that he has trouble right there. Trouble by Klammer right on the top. Trouble again, Frank. He's right on the edge.
Iconic yellow right ski suit.
Well, he's just about 200ths of a second behind Brucey.
And even with those mistakes, Franz Klammer, though, has a tendency to really come on strong at the bottom of half of downhills. But the pressure on him is tremendous. Bernard Brucey sitting at the bottom of first place.
Oh man, that jump was amazing.
Roger said he's on the edge. Believe me, he is on the edge of disaster. And he knows what he has to do. Look at him fly.
So remember one thing. He's carrying a lot of speed down that mountain. We saw him almost go in.
Bob Beatty.
Is that who it was?
Yeah.
Intermediate time. That will appear on the right. Brucey's will be on the left as we pick up that second intermediate time. The Austrian fans at the bottom of the hill are going crazy.
And Franz Klammer certainly cannot be accused of doing anything but attacking. Look at him go, Franz. He's
still a second behind Rusey. He has got to let it go.
I love how they got the splits. He's a second behind.
Franz Klammer is really going to have to move. And he's going to catch Rusey. He's almost out of the hay bales.
And into the bear trail.
The hay bales, yeah.
And then he'll head for home. You'll see Rusey's time come up to the left. Klammer's on the right.
He's going to have to do it right down here at the bottom, Frank.
Oh, man.
This is it. This is for the gold medal.
Franz Klammer is really going to have to pull it out. Look at him get on that top.
Rusey's time on the left, Klammer on the right. Klammer has done it. His crowd has gone crazy. Franz Klammer has overtaken Bernard Rusey. An incredible race.
I mean, that's just good stuff.
I'll give you another event that Frank Gifford called, and I'll give you a hint. It was 1972.
Okay, that was when I was three, so I'm not sure I remember that.
Okay,
it was the when we got robbed of the gold medal in the Russia game. He did the basketball, and I can't even remember if he had a basketball analyst with him. It was like, yeah, we're going to win the gold medal, big deal, and it turned out to be and sadly they didn't really know the rules all that well. That's why there was all that confusion.
The international rules,
yeah,
they were kind of a lot different than others. So I
can
what so what do you guys have for the most electrifying 60 seconds or less, not a single highlight in sports history that those who and I'm sure there's a few I'm probably going to get emails, people going, oh, my God, I never knew about this or this. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you mentioned it. I'm going to get some emails saying you forgot about that and that. And I'll say, oh, I can't believe I forgot.
Reggie Miller at the Garden. You know,
with the three,
yeah,
how many threes was it?
It was
to
like
do the choke sign,
18 seconds left,
or,
yeah, 18 seconds left.
And I think it was three threes, yes. And then he gave Spike Lee the choke sign.
Okay, that's a good one right there. You know what year that was?
94 or five, I think.
94 game right. Five. This is stupid vertical video. I hate you, YouTube, for vertical video. Give me the horizontal. Nope, it's not giving me the horizontal. Okay, Gene, what about you?
I got two that come to mind. 86, Mike Tyson, Marvis Frazier.
Oh, yeah.
30 seconds, the fastest knockout of Mike Tyson's history.
Wow.
Watch it. Your jaw will be on the table.
What was Spinks? Spinks was pretty fast too.
It was like 45 seconds.
45 for Spinks, yeah.
But 30 seconds. And Joe Frazier was with Marvis in the corner as they were introduced. You could see Joe Frazier with, you know, mugging for the camera. And then Tyson comes out swinging. And he goes down, and he just like is looking over him, and just walks away like the typical Tyson fight that you love to see because you could not miss a single one of his moments.
Because he destroyed people.
Yeah, it was yeah.
He was so good.
People would go buy popcorn and they'd come back, and the fight would be over.
It's over.
Well, how about I don't know.
Here's the Reggie Miller sequence for you. Okay.
Reggie Miller, who again is staring in the direction of yes, Batman.
Told you, you guys are gonna choke. They're going down. They don't have enough other things and
balls.
Right in front of me, my wife's sitting right here. He puts one hand around his neck, and with the other hand, he grabs his crotch.
Now you get fined for that.
Yep. Oh yeah.
She just sits there just like this.
Byron Kerr talking
didn't
about
move.
It.
Not one bit.
Look, I'm from Brooklyn. You're not just, you know, I'm not going to repeat what he said, but with my wife there, I had to say something.
God, that's such good stuff right there.
How about real game time, the four touchdown passes that Doug Williams threw in the Super Bowl? How much game time? Because it was all in the one quarter.
Right.
Yeah. It was, over an extended period of time, it was a flurious quarter of action.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking about like 60-second chunks. And I know the Franz Klammer is 2 minutes and 18 seconds or whatever, but still.
Let me give you another one. More recent. 2019 Masters, Tiger Woods needs bogey on 18 to win the Masters for his 15th major championship. He sticks it. He walks down. It takes about 30 seconds to walk down. There's a sea of humanity behind him. When he gets to the green, you can't see anyone.
Yeah.
It's like 20 people deep. He sinks that putt, and it's just like cathartic. Like, to me, that was most in the last 10 years, probably my number one sports moment that I can remember, just for as a fan.
Well,
talking about reporting, just as a fan.
It was incredible, and it was also a direct echo, Gene, because they say that history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes, and it does echo. An echo of Nicklaus in 86.
When he was 42 and won the Masters.
46.
46,
Everyone assumed Nicklaus was washed up.
Yeah.
Everyone assumed that Tiger, with all of his surgeries and everything else, couldn't possibly win again. He might do okay.
Yep.
And like in 86, where all the pursuers, Seve and Norman, collapsed under the impending growing weight of the roars of, holy shit, Jack is making a move.
Yep.
The same thing happened with Tiger. Yep. Everyone, Molinari collapsed.
Xander Schauffele.
Xander, all these guys hitting in the water left and right. You're like, this is incredible to see happen again.
That was, the Tiger against that generation. Now currently our generation's best. I mean, there's nothing like
How about the chip on 15 in what?
16.
16? How long did that take?
As a singular highlight, that's one of the most artistic, aesthetically perfect things in golf history.
Yeah.
From every...
In your life. And the great call. The greatest call ever. With...
In your life...
Oh, no, that was Jack. Right?
No, In your life was definitely the Tiger chip in after a long pause by the great Vern Lundquist, Uncle Vern. The call that was on 17's putt in 86 was Ben
yes,
Wright.
Sir?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yeah. That was Ben Wright?
No, Ben was on 15. I believe Oosterhouse was on 17.
How
called
about
that?
How about this one?
Kirk Gibson against Dennis Eckersley.
That's a great single highlight, but the mayhem.
But Lasorda deciding whether or not he wants to put Gibson in, and he has to, then Gibson walking up there, not just the swing, but him going up there, and then taking the strikes, and then after the home run, like barely being able to walk around the bases. Like it was had to be a home run or nothing, because he wasn't going to be able to leg out a double.
It was Vern Lundquist on 17, Andy, that said, yes, sir.
Okay.
It was not Ben Wright. The whole thing with this, the whole at bat, for Kirk Gibson. I've seen the...
And was Vin Scully said, I cannot believe what I just saw?
No. That was Jack Buck.
Jack Buck, okay.
And Scully was doing TV.
Right.
So Scully knew to get it out of the way. Right. But yeah, but he set the whole thing up. And actually, he was saying, you know, that there's Gibson in the dugout, and he's not going to be able to go tonight. And that gets word to him, and go the hell with that. And he goes into the cage, and he's, you know, hacking, and he says, I'm ready. Tell the sword I'm ready.
Yeah, I'm not talking about just the swing, but the circumstance surrounding it. Yeah, here you go.
It's a 9-minute clip, and nobody sets the scene as good as Scully. Yeah. And nobody lays out like he is.
Yeah.
You have to remember, Eckersley was the Mariano Rivera of that time. Unhittable.
Utterly unhittable.
He said, listen
how loud it is. He's just warming up with the donut right now.
Yep.
And I don't think anybody realizes how crippled he is.
No.
And all year long, he answered the demands. Until he was physically unable to start tonight with two bad legs, the bad left hamstring and the swollen right knee. And with two out, you talk about a roll of the dice. This is it. If he hits the ball on the ground, I would imagine he would be running 50% to first base. So the Dodgers trying to catch lightning right now.
What a setup. The best. What a setup by Scully.
Yeah.
Fouled away.
I mean,
that's when you knew that swing. He was not doing anything but running the bases.
Look at how bad that swing looked.
Yeah.
He can't move his legs. His legs are shot.
He can't push off and he can't land.
He's going to use
his only appearance of the World Series, too.
Yes.
What a tribute.
4-3 A's. Two out, ninth inning. Not a bad opening act.
Building drama.
Mike Davis, by the way, has stolen 7 out of 10. If you're wondering about Lasorda throwing the dice again.
Oh, to get him into scoring position, right. Yeah.
I don't know if I need to fast forward this or not.
I think there's a while, but.
Well, there's 9 minutes. Just listen.
Fouled away again.
Two strikes.
He's staying on an outside corner. He's not going to give him a ball to pull. Gargiola. With Davis, he just missed, but here's two quick strikes, both fastballs.
This is where the pitch clock would kind of ruin these moments.
No question.
I'd like to know the time between pitches. I'd have to get the stop.
It got worse after this. It really got ridiculous.
It did. I know.
Back with two out and Davis at first.
There were a couple throws over to first.
Yeah. A thin Mark McGwire, too.
During the year, not necessarily in this spot, but he was a threat to bunt. No way tonight, no wheels.
They're plenty deep in the outfield and a lot of room. They're playing him straight away in center field.
I'd love to bid on that helmet, that number 23 helmet. I wonder where it is.
Probably Hall of Fame.
Probably cost as much money as the Rigo jersey. Are we going to bid on that, by the way, Andy, the Rigo jersey from the Super Bowl?
I think it's already done. I think they're having it this weekend.
Let's get a consortium together. Gene, you in?
I'd be in.
Little number, foul.
Foul. Like, that was it right there.
And McGwire, if he...
One sideways bounce off a pebble down the first base line. None of this ever happened.
Also, right. McGwire charges that harder. Maybe he gets it before it goes out of play.
He's not driving that ball.
It bounces sort of inside the line.
He almost has to talk to his legs and say, hey, let's go. We got to get out of here.
He has to talk to his legs. That's great line right there.
He really is.
Again, no pitch clock. 0-2 still. Crowd is just on its feet.
Ball one. And a throw down to first. Davis just did.
And they were really worried about Davis stealing.
Well, if he's on second,
it makes a big difference.
Yes. Yeah, that's a tying run, right?
Yeah. Right.
Mike Davis didn't see it for that split second, and that made it close.
A lot of times what you do, you'll give a sign to the first baseman, say, now be there. They call it now be there play. If I get the ball, I'm going to throw it. 14 fastballs in a row. That's all he's been throwing.
There goes Davis, and it's fouled away.
That's a great spoil pitch right there.
It is.
Will we live long enough to see the Oakland A's turn Las Vegas A's in the World Series again?
It depends on ownership.
Yeah.
And how long we live.
That's.
Have you ever seen the AI predictions of future champions in various pro leagues where they map it out 50 years? It's pretty funny.
I'm so anti-AI that I probably wouldn't.
I know.
2-2.
You know, this wasn't just one lucky swing. This was a hell of an at-bat by him to spoil these pitches.
Yeah, I mean,
he led off the inning and popped up.
Eckersley had not given up a home run like in 3 months. Unbelievable.
Notice, too, how few foreign-born players were in the majors back then.
Yeah.
These were pretty much all American players.
Yeah.
You know?
And the A's were overwhelming favorites.
Yes.
They had the Bash Brothers, Canseco and McGuire.
Yeah.
With Stewart.
Dave Stewart.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yep.
And then Eckersley on the back end. They were kind of.
Yep. They were loaded.
There he goes. Way outside. He's stolen it.
Well, he got the base. Yep. Anyway, yeah. So now at this point, we don't need the home run. What we do to win the game, but to send it to extra innings.
It was way too late. Davis was way
out there. I forgot he stole the base.
He could have walked in.
This is why you can't kill baseball.
No.
It's the only sport that presents this kind of theatrical tension in slow motion in the biggest of moments.
But, as we talked about, the younger generation has no attention span. Are they around for the ninth inning, or are they going to Netflix?
There's a lot of kids that play baseball still and are quite into it, even though it shouldn't work in today's day and age.
Yeah.
That's one thing I've found, but yeah. And even though it won't be as many Americans, the international love for baseball, especially in, you know, Central America and whatnot, and you know, Japan, Korea, you name it.
All our sports are international now, except for football.
I know.
Hockey, basketball, obviously.
Football's looking into that market, too. They're starting to.
Once the rest of the world learn there's more than just soccer, they're like, oh, shit, I like this game. Basketball's cool.
Is that the plate? High fly ball into right field. She is gone.
Incredible.
This is when he pumps his fist, like, right there.
I just got a chill right there.
Yeah.
Literally got a chill watching it again.
Joe Davis used that on the, not this past World Series, but the one before with Freddie Freeman.
Okay.
With the walk-off grand slam.
It was a good call by Joe Davis for sure. Gibson is barely walking, coming into home plate.
He was one heck of a tight end at Michigan State, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And then I think it was 4-1, right?
Yeah.
The Dodgers won the series.
Yeah.
And then the shot of the A's players filing out of the of the dugout down to the tunnel. Wow.
Oral Hershiser, their MVP. He pitched an inning in relief.
Socia still playing at that point. Yep.
Sort of.
Steve Sachs, Tim Cruz. Yeah. I mean, that is
good stuff. What I like best about this highlight, my little Easter egg, I call it in this highlight, is, you know, somebody is doing what I do, which is leaving early, and you can see in the parking lot a set of taillights suddenly go on, brake lights, probably as they were listening to the radio call, and they were like, oh, shit. They, like, slam their brakes on. Take a look. You'll see it coming up here as he hits the home run.
They show the parking lot right away?
Right there.
Oh, right there, yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is great.
Because you got that low.
Those lights come on almost in sync with the ball leaving the yard. And I'm convinced could have just been stopping for a pedestrian. I don't know.
That reminds me.
I want to believe it was they were listening on the radio and they heard it and they nearly crashed.
Didn't that happen when the Bills came back against the Oilers and like half the stadium had left and they had to get back into the stadium when Frank Reich engineered that comeback and they were down 38-3?
It happened there. It happened in the Seahawks-Packers championship game in Seattle.
Well, the one that's memorable was the Ray Allen shot with Miami and San Antonio. Remember that? And that's, people had left the arena, you know, in Miami thinking the series was over.
Right.
And they tried to get back in, wouldn't let them get back in.
Yeah.
Man. Always stay to the end.
Sports.
Unless you're Tony Kornheiser.
Or me.
Or Zabe.
Or me. Or Zabe, right.
Sports the best. Yeah. Like, who doesn't like sports?
There are people that don't.
There are. It's weird. But, and you look at them like, so what moves you?
We had this on
what
the show.
What do you do for your
did you ever hear, Gene, about my non-sports friend, Warren?
You have one non-sports friend? Warren, I have zero, by the
Warren
way.
Warren at the gym.
Warren at the gym. We were on the step mills together.
Okay.
And I see on the Today Show, there's Tim Tebow, as Tim Tebow is becoming Tim Tebow.
Sure.
And he's pretty well known at this point. I think he may have already won the Heisman.
Yeah.
And I say to him, wow, he's really gone mainstream. Tim Tebow's on the Today Show. And he says, who's Tim Tebow? And I almost fell off the machine. And then we began talking, and he liked to ride his bike, and he liked, certain things, and he knew a little bit. Yeah. But I was thinking, if you didn't have sports in your life, how much time you would have? And it's not just people like us who work in it. I'm talking about, like my son is a teacher, but devotes an awful lot of time to sports. He loves it. But if you eliminate that from his life, you got to find something else to fill the time.
I don't know what I'd fill it with. I mean, now probably reading to my daughter, which is great.
Can't do that.
You cannot do 24/7.
NFL games, 3 hours. She doesn't have a 3-hour attention span.
They don't give you a paycheck for that. Last I checked. I would love one if anyone can do that for me.
Yes, yes. We don't give you a paycheck for this lunch, but we do give you lunch, and we thank the Palm for that. Gene, thank you for your time. This will not be the last time that you're with us, and may a path through the dark wilderness find itself for you and your colleagues at the Post in the sports section, because I know we appreciate what you guys do.
Well, Zabe, thank you.
All right, my friend.
I would love to come back.
Okay, yeah. Buddy. All right, Andy, you've been fed. Don't bitch for another 3 months.
Next time you text me, I'll know it's chicken parmesan. I'll be
hold
happy.
Hold on. Let me get the window sticker like an oil change. Put it on your forehead you've been at the Palm. You're good for a while.
5,000 miles these days.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Enjoy your Tuesday, and we'll see you next time on the Zabecast.
So what happens now? Is the food free or do we pay someone?
Of course not. They send you a bill.
We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh no. With MyBookie and its cash-out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets. Or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag.